Hello, everyone. I don't know if you hear a buzzing in the background. There's a refrigerator. It's particularly loud. There's nothing really I can do about it, but we'll see if we can get this video out anyway. Hopefully, it's not too much of a bother. I want to talk today about how I've had a few videos lately that briefly mentioned the pejorative that anti-MGTOW women and women in general sometimes throw around, and that is the accusation of autism or being autistic or having Asperger's or what have you. Now, in the future, I want to explore autism since it's really extremely interesting. I think in the future, when enough autistic people demonstrate these amazing abilities that they've been increasingly known to display, especially high-functioning autistics, for example, in the field of mathematics or having photographic memories, really kind of bordering on photorealism, etc. I think that science is going to really explore this, I guess you could say affliction, but that's for another time in another video. I want to discuss why women see fit to throw around this armchair diagnosis of autism as a form, really, of shaming men. Particularly, it's a variant of what we call creep shaming, which we've documented in the manosphere pretty thoroughly now. When women throw around this insult of a man being a quote creeper or what have you, it's essentially a way of signaling to other women that this man really isn't fit to reproduce with women. And it doesn't really matter that this man may be a perfectly well-adjusted, productive, and even uniquely beneficial member of society. A primitive thing in her brain has labeled him unfit for the process of mate selection, and the term creeper is the syntax used to signal to the rest of the female hive mind. And this is the same dynamic that inspires the female classification of men who expose their dysfunctional behavior as laying somewhere on the autistic spectrum. But gentlemen, it goes a bit deeper than that. It's actually a fair bit of projection of female inadequacies onto men that's taking place. Now, the interesting part is the fact that autism, at least in terms of the definition with which females use it as a pejorative, these supposedly autistic qualities are the qualities most exhibited by the women throwing around this pejorative in the first place. It's a form of projection in hopes of mitigating the shame she feels for her stunted mind. Women, the ones in particular that seek traits like confidence and self-assuredness in men, are actually mitigating their own insecurities in doing this. This ties back to things such as male mother need and male loneliness. You see, our species' tendency to overlook male suffering forces men at a very early age, and much earlier than women, if women ever confront this reality at all, it forces men to confront that we are, as individual human beings, creatures that are fundamentally alone in this mortal existence. And this realization, for many men that dare to be naive regarding this, is demonstrated to them when they realize that if they lose their job, for example, they can expect homelessness. If they don't develop social skills, they can expect to be outcasts. If they don't make themselves valuable somehow, they can expect to be disposed of. Now, women tend to discover this much later in life when their beauty is fading and menopause is approaching, and even then, it's a much softer realization than that which men face, since there's always some sucker beta provider willing to pedestalize her anyway. And in fact, if you look, gentlemen, at the most outspoken female critics of MGTOW, what is it that you see? You see aging geriatric hags that have hit the wall hard and have nothing left to look forward to but menopause and the impending realization that soon she'll be almost as disposable as the men she feels entitled to. But all this does not go unnoticed by either men or women. It's just that, as I've said in previous videos, to openly acknowledge it would be to threaten the very fabric of a civilization constructed around the engine that drives it, i.e., gynocentrism. And thus, it is preferable to keep it just under the surface, repressed just enough so that we understand the rule sets of a gynocentric framework, but not just enough so that we forget it exists. Now, of course, there's also a biological component to all of this, which we've talked about at length in previous videos, but the way with which gynocentrism is manifested also depends not only on biological, automatic, and innate characteristics, but on social and environmental cues. And the part that depends on environment and culture is this portion of the gynocentric fabric of our civilization that exists in this state, right? This just under the surface, but not too much under the surface quality of female deference on the part of men and female entitlement on the part of women. And I'll give you an example of how this works that many of you guys may be familiar with. Now, have you ever been in an argument with a girlfriend and this happens? Completely hypothetically, let's say that you and your girlfriend are having an argument about a vacation. you guys wanted to take a trip to Cancun, Mexico. And now I've never been to Cancun, so I have no idea how much a vacation to there would cost. But let's say that for both of you, the price for an all-inclusive vacation package to Cancun is $2,400. That is $1,200 per person. So you talk with your girlfriend and you tell her, okay, so it looks like we can do this. And you start planning out who's going to pay for what. And you say, you split it down evenly and you say, I'm going to pay for this and that and this, and you're going to pay for this and that and that. And so you guys book the vacation, everything's good to go, and you booked ahead, and you're set to be in Cancun in a few months, right? Good for you. So the time finally comes, and you guys have both paid your tickets, you get on the plane, you arrive in Cancun, and then you guys start doing all of the fun things you plan, but all of a sudden, she gets this attitude every time you guys have to pay for dinner evenly, or a souvenir, or, you know, parasailing evenly, and you guys get back to your hotel room and you ask her, well, why are you being such a bitch about this? You then logically explain point by point how you guys agreed to split the cost evenly, and you know you're in the right, and she can't provide any decent rebuttal as to her behavior, and eventually, as the argument gets more heated and progresses onwards, she just screams out, well, I shouldn't have to pay. I'm the girl. I'm the girl. Right? Moments like these are moments when women show their own self-loathing. And this is also when women show all of the qualities they label as autistic when men display them, plainly, right in front of your face. Right? It's a self-loathing that she projects onto the man out of a jealousy for his assuredness and his confidence, all of the traits that she lacks. And this is what fuels the meme that our species has developed, right? Called the Battle of the Sexes. I've talked about this before and called it gender antagonism, mutual exploitation, whatever you'd like to call it. And that's why she hates and loses respect for any man she's involved with that fails to exude the confidence and self-assuredness she craves from him. Because a lack of those traits reminds her of what she lacks and what she is. It reminds her of her own self-loathing. Her own perception of herself, which is that of weakness and cowardice. And rather than confront that weakness and cowardice, she attacks it whenever she sniffs it out in some man she's involved with. And this is the truncation of female adulthood. Most women don't understand that the confidence and self-assuredness she seeks in men is only arrived at by these men from an origin point of confronting his own weakness and his own cowardice. She fails to realize that he too was at one point weak. He too, at one point, lacked confidence, and instead of seeking out someone to blame that on, or to project that onto, he turns inward and overcomes it. So we're going to talk more about this process in a little bit, but that process, gentlemen, is the path to male adulthood. And generally speaking, the female human being is locked in a loop protocol that hoists her own cowardice and weakness onto others and never confronts it. And this is why I believe that so many women, whether it be of the feminist or traditionalist variety, act like frightened little girls that are incapable of functioning in the real adult world without male assistance, whether it come in the form of a husband or in the form of male taxpayer dollars. So these instances, like my Cancun example, right, they're rare. They're very rare. And you really should regard them much like you would upon witnessing some rare naturally occurring phenomenon, the human gender's equivalent of a blood moon eclipse or something along those lines. But what you've just witnessed, if you yourself have witnessed something similar, is the dropping of a pretension that helps to fuel our civilization. You've caught a glimpse into the actual state of society, into the actual intrinsic nature of it. You've peered past several layers of socialized behavior and glimpsed into the mind of the female lizard brain, and it says to you, hissing, to be its slave. Simple as that. It says, give me your labor, give me your wealth, and I just may allow you to one day make a couple of half copies of yourself, and maybe you'll get to stick your dick in me occasionally, and maybe you won't feel quite as alone so often, and the cost is a good portion of your freedom, your life expectancy, and frankly, your destiny. So again, we're going to get back to the autism stuff in a bit, but ask yourself this for a second. Doesn't that sound to you like a shit deal? Doesn't it? Let's talk about loneliness for a bit here. What is it that men are scared of when they seek to remedy their loneliness through the costly act of acquiring female companionship or marriage? Why are they willing to pay so much and give up so much for this female companionship? I believe that it is the fear of self-introspection. It's the fear of being alone with your thoughts and your identity. You know, I'm starting to become convinced that male adulthood doesn't really start until that male experiences self-introspection and isolation and doesn't, this is the important part, does not shy away or run away from it. I'm not trying to push a religious agenda here. The purpose of me quoting this has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with my conception of manhood. But the biblical passage in Corinthians 13:11 states as follows. When I was a child, I used to speak like a child and think like a child and reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. Now, I'm not sitting up here telling you how to be a man. I'm simply relegating my definition of manhood to you. Do with it what you wish, but I think there's a lot of truth encapsulated in that quote. Now, the question I pose to you is, does manhood exist? And is it characterized by a certain transformative process that a male experiences? I contend that the answer to that question is yes, and I also contend that Blue Pill Society's vision of manhood is actually anything but. It is anything but manhood. It is a reversion back to childhood, and I reject society's manhood model, and I think that the process of self-introversion I've mentioned earlier is the actual definition of manhood, or at least the beginnings of it. In my opinion, true manhood is wrapped up in a whole bunch of things, right? Like the realization, not just in some far away, one day type of way, but in a yes, this is actually going to happen and I'm going to have to deal with it kind of way. But the realization of your father's immortality and a replacing of your father's identity with your own, it is typified by an alienation, not so much a hatred, but a gradual distancing from your mother. It's really wrapped up in a lot of shit, but first and foremost, I think it's wrapped up in taking the dive into your own identity, turning inward in hopes of an exploration of and eventual release of the ego. And it's this that eventually opens the floodgates for male adulthood, which really, when you really look at it, is just a recalibration with reality. Male adulthood is a form of reconvening with reality and not being mad or hurt by what you find. Male adulthood, manhood, is a process of discovery and a search for truth. And so whatever represses or inhibits that quest for truth is then, it must follow, an attempt to revert back to childhood. Marriage, I believe, is a repression of male adulthood, and that's why our society is so obsessed with framing it as the right thing to do or what a real man does or whatever. It's actually the exact opposite. You see, marriage is a subconscious yearning for the return of your mother after that alienation period I mentioned earlier. Reproduction as well is a reversion to the child mind who knew nothing of death and for all intents and purposes genuinely believed he was immortal. And that's really what all the fuss over family and reproduction is about. Now sure, of course, we're a biological species and we're here to reproduce. Nobody denies this, right? But we're also possibly the only species capable of thinking about these things on both the conscious and subconscious levels to the degree that we do. And you have to realize that a great many things in this society are backwards. A great many things we take for granted as truth are complete lies and misdirections. And one of these things is the male provider and protector role as being symbolic of manhood when it is in fact symbolic of a good deal of weakness and apathy and self-loathing on the part of the man engaging it. Think about it, gentlemen. Why are these men, specifically these provider protector types, so scared of going to the doctor? Why are they terrified of losing their ability to provide? Because they know that if they lose their ability to do so, their wife will toss them aside with about as much consideration as one would regard a soiled napkin. Now, when I say that these men are self-loathing, think about that for a second. What type of man would voluntarily engage in that type of relationship? It's a self-loathing man, it's a scared man, it's a lonely man, and a man that is not at peace with himself. A man who is at peace with himself will not allow himself to be knowingly exploited in such a way. And again, I use the word man loosely because you have to remember that this type of relationship, or at least the man's participation in it, is a regression towards the child mind. It's a capitulation by the man to the forces of male mother need. Now there's a reason, think about it, why when these provider-protector marriages fall apart, when the woman, who was only there for provision anyway, finds another way via another man or the state or even on her own to provide for herself and then she leaves. And really, it doesn't even have to be a divorce. It can be a simple marital separation, for example. There's a reason why it's the man who falls apart, not the woman. Right? He calls into work, he stops cleaning his home, sometimes he'll even ignore basic hygiene and stop showering and shaving. And after all, it is only children who need their mother to tell them to shower. It is only children who need to be reminded of obligations and hygiene and cleaning their room. This is a man exhibiting the traits of a child who has been abandoned by their mother. And this is why men really, in all male demographics, but especially traditionalist men, after being left or cheated on by their women, immediately take the agency off of a woman every time and all the time and look for a place to redirect their anger. Right? For example, the man she cheated with. Or even an entire race of men, if that man is of a different race than him. Pretty much any differentiating characteristic, they'll focus on it. It doesn't have to be race. And on the macro scale, traditionalist men and even anti-feminist men are simply treating things like leftism or feminism, etc., as the boyfriend, where all of their anger can be redirected, because to put anger and thus agency on, and I put this in quotes, their women is to acknowledge that their mommy didn't want them, essentially. You see, that's why they're so mad that women replaced them with the government. It doesn't bother them that they're in some usurious and exploitative contest in which women regard them as meal tickets. It only really bothers them that they lost that contest to the state. Essentially, it bothers them that one of their siblings, i.e. the state, is getting more attention from mommy than he is. So, going back to autism, what these women attempt to say when she makes this accusation is actually that one is a defective in terms of female validation. You see, females tend to let their mind atrophy into a state of perpetual adolescence and even regress towards childhood and end up turning inwards and remaining inwards, right? Their introversion truncates around a fixation towards their own uterus. But when men, particularly the introverted type that these women throw this accusation at, turn inwards, they do so in hopes of exploring the outer realms of consciousness and understanding. So what I mean by this is that they start asking themselves what the meaning of reality is. They start contemplating the vastness of the cosmos or something along those lines. They go ahead and even create fictional worlds in their minds that your average gynocentric male or female could never imagine. Non-gynocentric introversion is the first step towards real adulthood, real manhood, and real masculinity, in my opinion. And you see this difference in men in particular between those that have achieved non-gynocentric introversion compared to those that exhibit some male version of the female truncation loop protocol I've mentioned earlier in terms of how a man reacts to female rejection. You see, MGTOW, we take a non-violent path of introversion into the imaginative realm, while gynocentric men seek a grand enemy to declare war on in reaction to their rejection, right? Take the Elliot Rodger types, which seem to lash out at men that he deemed unworthy, as well as the woman that betrayed him that he somehow was entitled to. This was a man that failed to decipher the lies his society told him, and really, in a pathetic attempt at slander, several MRAs earlier during this whole recent conflict between MRAs and MGTOWs, even attempted to link MGTOW to this Elliot Rodger character, and they even did that before. But the truth is that Elliot Rodger was the furthest thing from a MGTOW. He was a man who was simply too cowardly to come out of his introversion, a man who capitulated to this loop protocol during introversion that is characteristic of the female mind, and a man who used projection and misdirection of anger to blame other men and women for his rejection. And that coupled with the fact that, of course, he was seriously mentally ill. And all of this unfortunately culminated in a shooting spree. This is what causes men like Elliot Rodger to commit acts of mass murder, not supposed MGTOW misogyny. Elliot Rodger was the furthest thing from a MGTOW, and frankly, much closer in resemblance to the Anders Breivik character in Norway. The only real difference is that instead of responding to individuals who deprived him of women, Breivik responded to entire classes of people, the Muslim hordes, the evil Muslim male Hun that are coming to corrupt Europe, which he literally describes as a woman. Isn't that interesting? That's right, he describes Europe as a woman who is suffering from the rape of Islam. That should tell you all you need to know, doesn't it? Even still, with that said, even though Breivik was one of those cultural Marxism conspiracist wackos, I'm not going to be like certain MRAs that were walking around making these comparisons between MGTOW and Elliot Rodger. I'm not going to sink to their level and imply that if you're one of these cultural Marxist conspiracists that it makes you more likely to commit mass murder. It was Breivik's inability to graduate into true male adulthood, his inability to grasp the benefits of non-gynocentric introversion and self-discovery, coupled with severe mental illness, that caused him to do what he did. Anyway, thanks for listening, gentlemen, and much more to come.